Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined us tonight. Well, here in Florida, we are readying for our first hurricane of the season. And yesterday and early this morning, it seemed like it was going to be not much of anything. I was a little bit worried about some family that lives in the Jacksonville area, which is Monica. I was a little bit worried about Shelley. She's in kind of in the middle of this state. And by the end of today, it looks like, you know, it's hitting us right here in Palm Beach. So I'm going to apologize ahead of time in case we lose contact, because for the rest of the day, even though there's no storm here right now, the barometric pressure is kind of fluey. And all day long, my cell phone has worked only when it had a mind of its own and wanted to. And same with our television. Our television kept going off, and we just have to turn it off and wait for a little while and turn it back on. So let's hope we can have a full hour of the show. I'd like to talk about PTSD. And I'm pretty sure that Shelley and Monica can add to this. I think PTSD is an issue that people talk about all the time. I'm not sure, though, if people understand how how easily you can be affected by PTSD. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. It doesn't really mean that you have to have something absolutely horrendous happen to you. It can be something that's repetitious and unkind. It can be a lot of different things. But after talking about the addictions and all the opiates that we learned about being sold here, particularly in the state of Florida, I kind of did some more research, and a lot of the things that I found out have to do with people becoming addicted because they have several different kinds of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. So let's bring in the lady. Shelley's first on my switchboard. Hi, Shel. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hope you are too. Yeah, we're kind of watching the hurricane up here too. Nina works at Disney, so they had meetings there today because they have to have certain protocols in place because it's a, you know, it's a 365-day place. You know, it's open, plus they have people in resorts and
right.
things. When we're in a hurricane watch, obviously, places like hotels and resorts and things like that have to have certain protocols in place to make sure that everybody, you know, their guests are safe. The people that are staying with them. So yeah. So it's it went. And yesterday I was watching the news, and it was supposed to be a tropical storm, maybe hitting us as a Category 1, and now all
right.
of a sudden it, you know, inside of 24 hours it flips to a Category 3. It's like, oh my God.
mm-hmm. Yeah, and very possible to be a 5 when it finally hits land sometime on Sunday.
Right.
Is the latest I've seen. Let me bring in Monica. She is also in the line of fire up there in Jacksonville, and they have a pretty large property with horses and all that kind of stuff. Hi, Monica. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Rainey and Shelley?
Doing good.
I'm good, honey. I'm good. Yeah.
Good.
We readied today only because, we got stuff that we can use anytime, you know. But we went and stocked up on bottled water because we don't drink the well water. We bathe and things like that, but I don't cook with it or we don't drink it. So that kind of stuff, and gas in all the vehicles so that we aren't sitting in line for 3 hours on Friday. and you know, that kind of stuff, and some canned goods and everything, which I almost always have. But my son said to me, "Mom, we might as well get ready. It looks like it's coming here. And the worst case scenario is we have some extra stuff here." I said, "Good point." So we're all good to go.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're good to go. But it is a big, it's turned into a big deal. I mean, it's not a tropical storm anymore. And it is veering. Instead of going through Puerto Rico, where it could get broke up a little bit, it's all over the warm water for the next couple days. It could be a monster when it gets here, but let's hope it isn't. Let's hope it isn't. You would have a lot of preparations to do too, wouldn't you, Monica? You guys, your sister's place and your place, that's big up there.
Yeah. I don't know what to do. Get some water and have a flashlight. I don't know.
Well, let me tell you, Shelly and I did a show about this last year. It was one that you weren't on with us because it wasn't one of the healthy shows. But we talked about, and one of the things, I mean, we know so much about it. I mean, if you live in Florida, you know about hurricanes. And,
right.
But some little things that they have now that we found out when we were readying last year for Irma was like battery-operated fans. What a godsend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
That was like an amazing innovation, right?
Yeah, that would be great.
And, it makes a big difference, those little things. And, of course, I think everybody went out and got a better phone that can hold the charge longer after Irma. Because that turned into a fiasco. But, you know, you really do have to be prepared. And like I said, that's what we did today. And sometimes, even if the hurricane is over, there's no gas to be had. So it's important to have gas. So we fill gas cans and you know, and fill up our vehicles and all that kind of stuff. So let's hope that... you know, it's not going to be as bad as what it looks like right now. But I really wanted to talk about PTSD. And I have some emotional feelings about PTSD because I have people in my family that I know suffer from that. Neither one of them, well, they're a father and a son. Mike, Big Mike, after he got hit by the car and couldn't breathe so many different times and all the things that have happened to him, and his son who got set on fire. And as I delved into the opiate addiction, I kept running into that scenario. PTSD. A lot of people push themselves to this place because the PTSD has made them feel like they have to keep testing themselves to see if they're infallible or if they are, walking on some kind of a cloud and won't get hurt. And I read a very interesting article about that, and I believe that's what happened to my grandson, not so much my son, but definitely happened to my grandson after his journey from being set on fire and all the things that happened to him. So how do you both see PTSD for what it is? Do you think it's one of those kind of things that is something that doctors have just come up with a name for because, you know, it's another way to give you medication? What do you both feel about PTSD? Do you believe it? You think it's a real thing?
Well, of course. I mean, the PTSD, like everything else, is overly diagnosed. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is a very specific type of stress. It's stress related to a traumatic event. Now, that traumatic event can be ongoing. Abuse, like childhood abuse, can cause PTSD.
Right.
Or it can be a singular event like being raped or witnessing a murder or something like that. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a very specific term. Now, just being stressed out, just being unhappy with your life, being in a bad marriage, maybe even in a hostile marriage, but one that doesn't lend itself to abuse, being at a job where you're not
right.
Those are stressing, and that can really, that can impact. that can really impact on what. Wow, there's a lot of background noise. I can hardly hear you guys. Can you hear all that background noise that's coming from you?
That's me.
I'm sorry. That's probably Monica's dog.
Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm trying to find a quiet place, and it's not working.
Okay,
I got to go in the bathroom, I think.
There you go. But at any rate, the post-traumatic stress disorder, like I said, is a very specific diagnosis. And sometimes you can, you can diagnose, you can prescribe prescription medication to help the people. But in most cases, PTSD can be dealt with just counseling, with like EMDR. It's eye movement desensitized. I forgot what the initial stand for. I think it's EMDR. It's called eye movement or rapid eye movement, or something like that. But
I know
anyway,
what you're talking about.
I went through that because of the PTSD that I suffered after the incident I had with the where I had the drug overdose. Drugs were given to me that I didn't know about when I was 19, and I went into a full-blown overdose, bad trip type of thing. I lost my mind for 2 hours, and I suffered with flashbacks of that for 20 years. And, hey, Monica, do you think you could just mute your phone for a minute? Because that's really loud.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, I knew how.
Well, that you're better. Whatever you did is better.
Okay. So anyway, in my particular case, I never took any medication. I didn't take any psychiatric medication. I think in many cases, a lot of the cases that I followed, and Dr. Raymond does talk about this in his book as well, by the way, sometimes the psychiatric medications can actually increase the impact of PTSD. They can actually make the vulnerability worse because they have a sedative effect. The person feels more out of touch with reality instead of becoming more in touch with reality. So a lot of the therapies that are non-pharmaceutical, all right, and in some cases the pharmaceuticals do work, but the vast majority of cases, the PTSD therapies that are out now, such as the one that Attabel uses, the Mind Sonar, or the Rapid Eye Movement, one that was used on me, which was extremely effective, are more long-term effective. There's now new biofeedback type of therapies that are out there for PTSD sufferers, where it's actually, you have to get it through a counselor, but it's something, it's actually an app that the person can put on their phone. And when they're feeling a flashback come on, or when they're feeling panicked, or they're starting to relive a traumatic event that happened to them, they can actually hit this app on their phone, and it gives them a biofeedback rhythm that calms the brainwaves down. And actually, it basically what it does is just shuts down the relapse. It changes the level of the brainwaves, because in biofeedback, your brain will resonate to it. So there's all these different brain techniques now that are non-invasive, non-pharmaceutical, that are bringing sufferers of PTSD much more relief than what psychiatry has done in the past, which in some cases injured the person or made their trauma even more enhanced.
Well, I think one of the things that I learned after doing some a little bit more research on it is, of course, it has a lot to do with what the episode was about, has a lot to do with the age and the overall health of an individual. And I do believe that it's one of those kind of things that can be helped in a mind over matter kind of a way. However, having said that, I've met people who their fear of almost everything is, you know, like peaks at different times. And they tell me one lady that I talked to told me she can go for as many as 5 years without having any kind of, I'm not going to say repercussions, because then that makes it like it's a lot more often, but a smell or seeing something. Smells were mentioned a lot, by the way. And
that was a trigger for me too.
Atmosphere. Yep, atmosphere, things like that can trigger this. And the issue becomes for them, because they know, they say to me, I know that that's what's wrong with me. So I start trying to think of everything everybody's taught me and what I need to remember and what I need to let go of. And I breathe and I calm myself, but I still, you know, it's still an episode. The episode itself is never gone, I guess, was the thing that hurt my feelings the most when I realized that everybody that I read about or talked to in person told me that it's kind of like always with them. And that made me feel terrible, because that's like almost like being on guard, right? It's like, sometimes the expectancy might be what brings it on.
Right. Well, and that's what causes a lot of times the self-medicating. So if you have somebody that came back from the war and just saw mind-boggling violence over there, and it damaged their psyche to the point where they come back and they constantly relive that. Or you have somebody that survived a violent rape, or you have somebody that saw a murder or something like that, and then they relive that. In my particular case, my relapses were caused by a chemical injury to my brain, and I lived with that for 20 years. And so even if a certain smell that was in the room when the drugs were given to me that I didn't know, that smell came, I would instantly go back and like it was happening all over again. There was a song playing on the radio at that particular time. And if that song came on the radio for the next 10 years, I would go into a sheer panic. I couldn't get to the radio fast enough to change the dial. I could not hear that song because it would just throw me right back into a full flashback. So there were, so these are the things. So PTSD, one of the things it's marked with is reliving the episode or not being able to not relive the episode. And that's why a lot of people will self-medicate, because not that they're trying to feel powerful, they're trying to numb it. They're trying to just feel better. And when they're high or something like that, they feel powerful over the memory. Not that they're trying to test their limits of themselves, but they're just trying to get past that awful memory and to stop ruminating on it. And they can't seem to break the pattern of reliving it over and over and over again. So that's one of the hazards with PTSD, is the inability to stop ruminating, to stop reliving it over and over again. And every time you relive it, the fear or the panic of the moment comes all over again. It affects your physiology. You feel sick to your stomach. Your heart races. It's like you're going through it all over again. That's what I experienced for that 20-year period. Now, the first 10 years, it was often. The second 10 years, it became less and less and less during that time. But until I went through the therapy session with Anthony Chatham, I was having relapses, at least a couple times a month. And now, if I have them, because I still do, this was something permanent that I did to myself, every now and then I'll still have one of these, but the panic doesn't come in anymore, and I can literally shut it down in a matter of like a minute. So I don't go into that panic mode anymore. And, you know, and the song, I've heard the song since then, it doesn't bother me anymore. So a lot of the triggers I had for two decades don't trigger it anymore. So that one session I had with Anthony Chatham just did a remarkable job of literally giving me my life back, because I was suffering silently because I wouldn't tell anybody what I was going through until I sat down and finally talked to you, because I felt like I was coming apart again.
Mhm. Well, you know, the other kind of issue that is derived from this is one of the things that is the reason I brought it up, is because of the people that become so easily addicted to drugs that let them hide. And some of the articles that I read after we talked about this the other night on the show about the opiates, I couldn't wrap my brain around those numbers, Shelley. 800,000 pills prescribed by one doctor. 800,000 pills. I mean, I sat here in my room after we got done with the show and tried to wrap my brain around the enormity of that whole show, and the fact that they had records of a pregnant woman who was given, you know, something like 1,000 pills in a month. And nobody cared, the fact that she was carrying a child, nobody cared about anything. So then I started thinking to myself, so part of the addiction, you know, that hiding thing that they, you know, that they do to avoid the obvious is just that. It's like not wanting, like you experienced remembering things, and you talked about the song, and a lot of people say that to me, smells in particular. That's one of the things that's been told to me more often than anything else, is the smells of something.
And
I get that, because I'm pretty susceptible. I don't have PTSD, but I'm a lot of my memories are associated with different kinds of smells, so I could relate to that. And so I thought to myself, how would I like it if every time I smelled like my mother's perfume? For years, my mother wore the same perfume, and it was a mixture of her perfume and coffee and Palmolive. And now when I think about it, I was like, oh my God, and I liked it. I liked it, right? Disgusting. Right. But it was for me, and then it was my mother. You see?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was trying to wrap my brain around how somebody could be suffering like that and have those kind of memories generate into, you know, self-destructiveness, because that's what happens. Many times on the show I've mentioned going to the VA hospitals, and it's one of the saddest places I've ever been in my life. Now, I've also spent a lot of time at hospice. I've spent much time with people that are leaving this earth and stayed with them until they were gone. All heartfelt episodes in my life. But this PTSD that I see people suffering from, I don't think there's something you can say to somebody. You were so lucky that your mind was strong enough to render some help from Anthony. That's the truth. That's how I really feel, too. You were ready. You were ready to hear him, to put it into action, and to get to a good place. How many people are, honey? Not a lot. What's so sad.
Well, I'm not so sure that it was that I was ready to get help. Is that help that made sense to me was offered to me. I think most people that suffer from PTSD would jump at real help if it showed up for them. but that they're either have been convinced that it has to be a drug or a procedure, or they're afraid
right.
of being locked up in a mental ward or something like that. So they either suffer in silence, or they become a drug addict, and their life spirals down. So you have both situations. So in my particular case, yeah, I do have a strong mind, and you know, like I said, like I suffered in silence most of the time. If I was going through something, nobody next to me even knew, because I would be able to maintain myself. So obviously there is some strength to that, because sometimes I did feel like literally
right.
losing it in a crowd of people, and I didn't, okay? But on
mm-hmm.
the other hand,
mm-hmm.
as soon as I found out about a therapy, because I was not mm-hmm. willing to go to a psychiatrist, and I was not willing to take psychiatric medication. I had already gone on my holistic journey. I didn't trust that field. So I really was desperate, because I didn't know what else was out there. I think if somebody is suffering from relapses, if they're suffering from reliving a traumatic event, the fear, they become agoraphobic, they're afraid of leaving their house or whatever. I mean, a lot of people that have these things happen to them become reclusive because of it. If
right.
you were able to offer them some sort of a therapy that was not just drugging them out of their minds or putting them in an institution, I think they might be willing to pursue it just to get some relief. I think people want relief. They just don't know how to get it, and maybe they fear what are the more commonly known relief mechanisms, and that's why they turn to self-medicating, or just like I did, suffering in silence for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, my experience, like I said, I have been a part of one of the family members getting some help from somebody that I've talked about many times on the show, who's a good friend of yours and has been a godsend to a lot of people. And she definitely helped him. She brought him to a place where he didn't feel like he had no say in what was going on in his head. But he still, after all of that, and after he got to a better place, every time he had a chance to do something that was daring and not a good idea, he did it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm just getting him. This October, it's the 10-year anniversary.
Right.
This October,
right.
the day after his birthday, is the 10-year anniversary. And
right.
now, you know, he's going to be 25 years old. And he was like a time bomb for the last 10 years. It's been this past year and a half has been the most focused, the most aware of what he needed to do for himself to keep himself in a good place that he's been since those days. And I will always, you know, thank our friend, because she did make a difference, but it wasn't over. And that's what I see, and that's what I read so much about, was how people go into that self-destruction mode, and
right.
they're looking to see if they're still breakable or if they're unbreakable. And
right.
and that goes to haywire.
Absolutely.
It just goes
sure.
haywire.
And absolutely. Well, see, the whole thing is that, like, you know, Michael and I both just did, you know, one treatment each. Now, like I said, I still mm-hmm. have relapses from time to time. The severity and the length of them is reduced by like 95%. I mean, I'm aware that it's happening, but none of the intensity happens. I don't go into the panic mode anymore. I can shut it down now, you know. So if I felt that I needed to completely stop it, I could have gone for another treatment or something like that. And that's what happens. The stories that I read when I did the psychology course is that in some of these cases, especially for people that really suffered from violent crime, like rapes and war veterans and stuff, they don't just go through one session. They usually have to go through a series of sessions that finally get them to the point where they can actually say, okay, I have overcome this particular, I can stop reliving this now. I can make it, I can actually break away from those memories and from the direction that it was sending me in my life, okay? The trajectory that those memories and those feelings were making me go. So what happens is a lot of time, I'll give a perfect example. A lot of times when you see young girls that were victims of incest, they will become prostitutes. It's almost like they take this thing that was being done against, being done to them against their will, and now they turn it out in a way that they can control it. So it's not that they're immoral. Mm-hmm. It's a psychological thing. It's like this was done to me, you know, from the time I was 8 till I was 18. Now I'm going to control it, and I'm going to make money and do something with my life as a result of it. And sometimes they also become drug addicts, you know. But, you know, it's almost like they take the thing that injured them, and then they do it voluntarily in a way to control it now. And it's just this psychological thing. Well, if they go through counseling, they can break that routine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with that. Of course, the issue is, and always has been, and probably will continue to be, is whether or not somebody actually can absorb the fact that they're still in trouble, can wrap their brain around the fact that they still need help. You know, some of those things become pretty elusive too. And they almost think like, you know, I'm fine. I mean, I like it this way, or this is what I want to do. I think understanding what you're capable of having for your life is an issue for a lot of people, not just people who've been hurt. I mean, finding your direction in this life is not easy for many people. I mean, you and I have met, and I'm sure Monica has met, people that are in their 40s, and they're still lost. They still act like they're a 16-year-old screw-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't even get to the point where they can say, oh, well, you know, maybe I should do this, because they, for whatever reasons, and sometimes it is scars, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just acceptance of who they think they are, and that's who they're supposed to be. And, you know, if you don't like it, you know, don't mess with me or don't have anything to do with me. I've met people like that too. But this PTSD, the stories that I read this week were heartbreaking. And I've met people like that. I think I mentioned a friend of mine who was in Vietnam, and he was so smart when we were kids. You know, and he came back, and, you know, he's like a street person. He's like a street person. And that's not where he was headed. But that's what Vietnam did to him. And if you go to the VA clinic, like I said, it's the saddest place I've ever been in my life. And there are people that live there for the rest of their lives suffering from PTSD, suffering from all of the unworked through mental illness that stays with them, sticks to them like glue, and they can't ever function again. And now, because of the drugs, we've said this before, and a lot of people poo-poo it. You know, somebody just said the other day, they were talking about the gun issue and having guns and everything, and they said, you know, a gun doesn't pick up itself and shoot itself. And I said, no shit. I mean, you know, God, that's really a ridiculous remark to make. That just means you don't want to discuss this. But the truth of the matter is, somebody who is not in their right mind, and you can put that in any kind of verbiage you want to, can pick up a gun and shoot somebody else for no reason. Happens every day. Happens every day. And this PTSD, because nothing is right. really being done about it, is right at the forefront, I believe.
Well, how about this?
Monica, let's hear from you.
Oh.
Oh, she said. What do you think? Are you there? Are either one of you there?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, we're here. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. It is a real thing. I believe, of course, it's a real thing. But I don't know anybody mm-hmm. who has it. And I've never, you know, I don't know anybody that has it, so I've never dealt with it. You know,
really?
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Well, that's pretty good. Actually, that makes me feel better to think that there's somebody who doesn't know anybody, because I know a lot.
I have this
gentleman right now who, when Mike got, he did a whole bunch of fundraisers. He's, warm and a good guy, and he kind of like started pursuing me to get me to do things with him, telling me what a good woman I am and how I help everybody, and got me involved in a couple different things. And after the second thing, I realized that I was dealing with somebody that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to help, and it was very obvious to me that he wasn't going to be able to help anybody else. So I kind of backed off, but in the interim, I started following this person on Facebook, and I found out that he's a vet and that he's done lots of things, and little bits and pieces of his story comes out, and without any kind of education about this other than the school of paying attention and listening to lots of people tell me things, I would say he suffers PTSD, and he's a little bit dangerous. I realize that. So I had to kind of like sever that relationship because he wanted to be a part of my family. I mean, you know, can I come over and have dinner? Do you make homemade dinners? Things like that, you know, and I was like, you know, and I, part of me, because I'm a pushover sometimes, what's the harm, right? Everybody's here. But then other things started to happen, and I realized he needs help. And there's a million other people like him out there walking around. And mm-hmm. it really becomes kind of scary. It really becomes kind of scary because they're usually very sweet, kind people, you know, but something happened, and they've never gotten past it, and that's pretty much what PTSD is. So I don't know, in my heart and in my head, instead of handing out opiates, it would be nice if we could find some kind of something that could help these people get past their issues, not enhance them, not make them more off the wall, but bring them to a more peaceful place. And of course, the things that we talked about, like being with Anthony or being with Adabella and those kind of things, and certainly Dr. Amen, everything that I read about him is all about the brain and how many things can be done about the brain. But when you try to think of an answer for the mess the world is in, that's the best one I can come up with. Somebody's got to start doing something about the scars that are left on people's brains.
Well, that's why I have something.
Go ahead, honey.
Oh, okay. I have something to interject. Whatever, you know, the scars on the brain, part of that goes back to, part of that goes back to your gut. I mean, yes, you've had traumatic experiences, whatever, seen a murder, a rape, or whatever. But it has to do with nutrition, how much magnesium you're getting. Magnesium is a natural calmative. That's going to help somewhat. And if you're piling on, when people are in that place, they're going to eat all kinds of garbage. They're not going to eat the best food for themselves. And I just think that, you know, proper nutrition and some magnesium is going to help. because their serotonin, their happy chemical, is made in their gut after, you know, with good nutrition. So that's all I got to contribute.
I think, the three of us all believe that. The three of us all get that. We believe that. We know that to be true. But in these people are usually immersed in the medical arena.
Right.
So, that's the problem.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We need to start saying, I mean, I was thrilled when I found out that the VA hospital up here in West Palm, it's a rather large VA hospital. It's not as big as the one in Miami, but it's a good-sized hospital. They have Jenny Lee there, Shelley, the acupuncturist. She goes there and treats them. And
that's,
I know now, too, that they all, it's amazing, right? And they all are invited to yoga classes. And they all talk about nutrition. Now, the nutrition that they're talking about is not as balanced as the kind of stuff that we talk about. But it is better nutrition than Kraft macaroni and cheese and bologna sandwiches. So, and that's a lot of what they get in the VA hospital, bologna sandwiches and, you know, processed cheese and all that kind of stuff, because that's what the government doles out for them. So I do see a step in the right direction, but I don't think everybody realizes the momentum that has been built up in regard to people's behavior, in regard to the PTSD. I think it's a something people say off the top. Try not to pay too much attention to him. He has PTSD, you know, he was in the war. That's it. That's the end of the conversation. So everybody just steers away from Joe Schmo, because now everybody thinks because he's got PTSD, he's, you know, a time bomb. And he could be, but that's not helping anybody. That's certainly not helping him or anybody he's going to come in contact with.
But when you're talking about PTSD amongst military people, I do think that our government does not follow through effectively. When you're talking about people that are victims of violent crimes, witnessing murders, being raped themselves, things like that, there's actually support groups. A lot of these crime dramas I watch, a lot of victims are given advocacy groups that they can go to get therapy and things like that to help them deal with the aftermath. But our own war veterans after seeing horrific things, a lot of them are just basically thrown back into society, even though it's recorded that they are mentally damaged. I think it's such it's a tragedy and a travesty both, that many of our military men, when they come back, I don't know if there's any recording of military women that have come back and had this happen, but I know that there's been many cases covered of men that came back and shot their family or shot somebody in the street.
That's right.
Because they flashed back and thought they were in the middle of a war zone, or they came back with such rage in them that they annihilated their whole family. I mean, the one story that was absolutely horrific, I don't remember how many years ago this was this guy, he had been subject to like Agent Orange, I don't think it was Agent Orange, but it was something like that, chemical, and it just altered him. The Army just sent him home anyway. He should have gone to a mental hospital, but they sent him home anyway, and he annihilated his entire family and then came out of his house, pointed the gun at the, at the SWAT team that was out there, and ended up committing suicide by cop because he couldn't handle, he couldn't stop himself, and then he couldn't handle what he had just done to his family. And he went, and it was just such a tragedy.
Are you talking about are you talking about the man here in Florida that did that to his family at Thanksgiving dinner?
I don't know. Was he military?
Yes, he was in the military. And he sat at the dinner table with his whole family for Thanksgiving, and even went in search of the child that was upstairs sleeping. So yeah, that was a horrific story. But that's my whole point. That's my whole point. If we know this. And when we talk about things on the show, I just like to talk about things that I know are going on and give people a little bit of information that I think a lot of people don't pay any attention to, because you see stories, but you don't get follow up. You don't see why would somebody do that. I mean, when that happened, everybody was like, "Well, he was crazy," and that was the end of it. He was crazy. But really, he was suffering from PTSD and should have had some help from the very beginning.
Should have had some help.
And didn't get it. Mm-hmm.
Well, think about all the laws that have been changed. Think about all the information that's out there that help people to make sense out of a chaos or a crisis in their life. It's because of shows like what you're doing. It's because people talk about it. You have all these people out there that have blog sites that have had something happen to them, and now they talk about it. There's victims, survivors, the families of people that have had violence happen to them that have set up websites with information. So, like, this happened to my family. These are the warning signs. I'm putting this information out there in order to help other people sidestep this in their own lives. And that's why a lot of the families, as heart-wrenching as it is, agree to do these shows. Like, I watch these crime dramas because I'm trying to study the psychology of violent crimes. And they all say the same thing. As heart-wrenching as it is for them to do these shows, the only reason they do it is because they can't bring their loved one back, or they can't not have been raped, or whatever their experience was. But they're hoping that their story and how they overcame it and continued on with a good life will inspire somebody else who already experienced it to have somebody to be inspired by. Or if somebody hasn't had that culminate yet in their life, that maybe they can find a way to get out before they experience this terrible, violent thing. And, so that gives these survivors and many of them do suffer from PTSD, and they talk about the different type of therapies they went through. But, that's one of the things is talking about it. The more people talk about the lack of government follow through, then that's how things get changed, because people start going to their people in government. They go to their congressmen, they go to their senators, and they say, this can't stand anymore. The government has to take more responsibility. You send these boys over there, you get them all screwed up, and then you bring them back here, and then you wash your hands of them. That's not right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's exactly what happens. I mean, and even on a lesser scale, there's also the other stories that we've all heard told. Sometimes we're even aware of it happening in our midst, and that's, family abuse. And they find out that a child has been abused, and very rarely, I know everybody says, oh, well, they put them here and they got all kinds of bullshit. Very rarely is there any help given that lasts any length of time and that there's any follow through with. I know that firsthand. You might see, a psychiatrist for a little while, say you're 6 or 7 years old, somebody you never talked to before. Your parents aren't allowed to talk to you because they don't want anything being swayed the wrong way. So this child gets put in a room with a stranger. And this stranger doesn't have anything invested in this child, so that's already put a different spin on everything. And this stranger has a book of rules of what questions he or she asks. And that leaves a very confused child. If you just think about that for a little while, if something, when that stuff happened to you, Shelley, there was a whole bunch of people a lot smarter than me at Epocrates that cared about you. You came to me because you knew that I would listen and because you knew that I loved you. And it made a difference. I couldn't do anything to really fix it, but having somebody listen to you for the first time and hear the whole story, then you got to move to the next step. And that's where we don't do the follow through. Because I'm in my life right now, and she's spending the day with me tomorrow. And she does say things to me, but she's very careful about what she says. Because she's been told that those things are supposed to be kept for the sessions that she has with this lady. And she tells me she doesn't like the things that the lady says to her. So here, and that's the truth. And it is what it is. And we're going to be working on that for a while, I'm sure. But the fact of the matter is, that's the way it's handled for almost everybody. But imagine just being a little kid and thinking you're going to get some help and finding out this person is just going to ask you embarrassing questions and not act like they're really going to do anything about it to begin with. So our world is a mess. There's no two ways about it, and somebody asked me today, do you believe in God? And I said, yes. And then they said, do you worship God? Do you go to church all the time? And I said, no, I don't. I was raised a Catholic. As a child, I went to church pretty regularly. I went to catechism. I did all that kind of stuff. But the God I believe in, for what it's worth to anybody, and I don't care whether it is or isn't, that's your gig, not mine. But for me, the God I believe in doesn't want me to worship him. He wants me to worship you too. He wants me to love you too. He wants me to love my children. He wants me to love my neighbor, and he wants me to be good to them. He doesn't want me saying, oh, God, I love you so much and forgive me for doing this. He doesn't want that from me. He wants me to be nice to everybody else and make other people happy. That's the God I believe in, for what that's worth.
I agree with that. Yep.
So and that's really the biggest missing part of our lives right now is I tell my family that all the time. They say to me, something about something, and I say, think how lucky you are. You have all of us, as imperfect as we all are. You will never be alone, not ever, not with this family anyway.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, like I said, I the PTSD really worries me. I'm going to do some more research into this, and I don't know, some of the people that I still am pretty close with, like the lady Jackie Rosen and Joel, our friend Joel Smith, they're doing some wonderful things with kids. And if it wasn't so far away, I'd still be doing things to help them because I so believe in it. And that's one of the things they're doing. They're taking these special classes, and the kids don't even have to have a surrogate of any kind sign them in. They can come to the class. Nobody asks them where they live. They just can come to school every day, and the teachers that teach these classes are trying to teach them how to take care of themselves and live in the world, which I think is like one of the best things I've ever heard of since I've been involved in all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Makes a big difference.
Keep in mind how many state-of-the-art new remedies there are out there. I shouldn't say remedies, I should say therapies. Therapies there are out there now that are not drug-based, not pharmaceutical in nature, not invasive, that are very effective and have helped, people who suffered traumas, the most horrific, violent ones you can think of, and they get their lives back. Like I mentioned a couple at the beginning of the show, there's so many more coming out in the field of positive psychology, and because the drug avenue a lot of times will add insult to injury. It's like antidepressants have a side effect of causing depression. I mean, literally, how inefficient is that? How ineffective, I meant, is that you would take something because you're depressed, and one of the side effects is depression and could cause suicidal tendencies. Yeah. You know, I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many therapies coming out now that are non-pharmaceutical based to help with healing brain function. And I agree with Monica that the improving the diet, doing things that help the brain from a metabolic standpoint, absolutely make a difference. I absolutely agree with Monica on that, no doubt about it. That can help the process. But I also think that when you're talking about PTSD and this type of traumatized brain damage, because it does alter the brain chemistry, okay, it also alters the brain activity. So if you do a brain scan, like Dr. Amon talks about in his book, the brain scans of somebody that suffered PTSD look different than the brain scans of somebody that hasn't suffered that type of trauma. It actually causes a measurable shift in the energy inside the brain. So those type of things, like the biofeedback and the EMDR and the mind sonar and these type of different therapeutic approaches, really help to then balance that activity out. And once the person can shift their brain, get the area of their brain that's unstuck, unstuck, then they can start letting go of reliving the past over and over. And that's what causes these people's lives to spiral down, because they can't, every morning they wake up and the first thing on their mind is, bam, this thing that they went through, this thing that they know about. All right. And then, so they don't want to wake up anymore. They want to just get wasted and just sleep all the time, and because then they're not facing it. And it causes them to basically retreat from their life with these fairly simple procedures that are very straightforward, that don't really have any side effects. They either work or they don't work, but they don't have side effects, can help people break that pattern, and then they can start getting some sense of life back. And what I like about Dr. Amon's approach is that because it's a fourfold approach, he does look at nutrition. So he's right in there with Monica on that. He looks at the different types of therapeutic approaches, social approaches. He also talks about spirituality. Now, he doesn't push any religion. He doesn't say you have to go to church or temple or a mosque or anything, but he talks about having a spiritual connection, because that can also help the brain chemistry return to normal. So he does talk about different types of spiritual practices, such as different type of meditations that have been shown to balance out brain activity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think doctors like Dr. Amon, I think people like you and Monica, I mean, all of us can only do a little bit of it at a time. One of us can't do all of the above. So, I mean, every time I think about stop doing the show, because I think to myself, who really cares? And I talk myself into this place. And then somebody calls me and says, you know, I listened to your show the other day. You're absolutely right. And they go into this big, long dissertation. And I'm like, so it's helping somebody, you know, anybody.
Right.
One buddy, you know, it makes a difference. And I think the more of us that do that, we can't help but get everything to a better place. And I
Absolutely.
Think caring about one another is the best gift we can give to anyone. So we're going to try to be back on Friday, but we'll see what happens. This may not, we may not be able to be, but we will if we can be. And both of you girls, stay safe. We'll have to make sure that we contact each other. I know Facebook is doing a I'm safe during Dorian's reign. So,
wow.
You know, but we can talk to each other. Even if we don't do a show Friday, we'll touch base and see where everybody's at. So God bless.
Right.
And thank you both. And Monica, you fill in all your soap orders, because I've put off calling you to get some. When will some be ready?
In about another week. Yep.
Okay.
Another
Perfect.
Week it'll be ready.
Perfect. Okay. All right. I'll give you a call. Thanks, girls.
Alrighty.
Love
Bye.
You both. We'll be back on
Thank
Friday
you.
If we can be. God bless. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
God bless. and be safe.
Yep,